You're listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show. Huge week for the discourse. A lot of healthy debates going on online. We will get to some of that. I'm going to start out with our winners and losers. I'm going to go off the beaten path a little bit to start. We've mentioned them a couple times, but the Dayton Flyers are clearly proving to be the class of the A-10 to this point in the season. 12 straight wins. They're undefeated in conference play along with the Richmond Spiders, but this is clearly Dayton's conference to lose. The only team so far that looks comfortably into the field as an at-large, should it come to that. Latest win was a 34-point win over Rhode Island, who came into that game 3-1 in the A-10. So even amongst their close peers, not really much competition so far. And that even included with Archie Miller getting out, playing some good transition defense. didn't really slow down Dayton too much. So it's much more than just Deron Holmes. He's a great player, but this is a more complete team, and they have just been playing great basketball for the last month or so.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at their starting lineup. I understand this was a 20-point game at halftime, and they cruised to a 30-plus point win, but only one starter played 30-plus minutes, and that's really just because they lack guard depth at this point with Malachi Smith out. 22 points for Bennett, 21 and 6 for Holmes, 3 blocks. They shot the ball well. They did not turn it over much, 2 times in total in this entire game. And they just look very, very comfortable right now with how they're playing. They are, as I'm pulling it up there, 25th in KenPom overall. Offensively, an incredibly efficient team at number 12. The defensive end of the floor is what can give them some trouble, but that could also be a factor due to the incredibly slow pace of play that they have. But it's funny. It's slow like Virginia, but it is not an eyesore whatsoever, just because they have such fluid offense that they're able to run.
Yeah, and all the way up to 15th in the net as well. So the metrics love them with good reason. And yeah, they are the team that, like FAU and the American, everybody's really gunning for. Everybody's trying to give their best efforts. They had a couple of closer calls to start A-10 play, and that'll continue the rest of the year, because Dayton's the one really quality win you can get in the Atlantic 10 this year. And there are teams that would like to play their way up into maybe being in that at-large conversation. Really, the only way to do that at this point is obviously not lose, but also if you play Dayton, get a win against them. Because that's really the biggest way to move the needle you're going to have the rest of the way. But yeah, I mean, very impressive so far. And soon, if they continue, we can really start to have a serious conversation about seeding, because there are a couple of quality teams. Like St. Joe's has been very up and down. St. Joe's at their best is a good basketball team, but they haven't played that consistently. Loyola is sneakily having a solid year. And I mentioned Richmond as well. Duquesne is maybe the best 0-5 team in conference in the country. They've had some really poor luck with injuries and close losses. But yeah, this is Dayton's conference, and it'll be interesting to see how long they can last on the streak.
Yeah, I'm doing a quick scan. I don't see anyone else that can stick up with Duquesne. But yeah, like the A-10, we were worried about the depth of the A-10. Teams like a Loyola, like a Rhode Island, were teams that we were worried would not perform, as they had a decent to bad non-conference schedule. Loyola is 5-1, like you said. Rhode Island 3-2. They came into that game at 3-1. The middle of the pack is interesting in the A-10. It is not as good as years past, but it is still quality teams, like you said, that can give Dayton a scare, even if the Flyers are playing top 20 basketball right now.
Yeah, Rhode Island, very fraudulent. Called them out earlier in the non-conference, and they were struggling. That was a little bit of a dead cat bounce, but Dayton kind of put them where I expect they would actually be. But that's kind of the problem for the A-10. Like, Rhode Island's not as good as they have been. St. Louis is not as good as they have been. VCU is not as good as they have been. And, I mean, now it's just kind of all on Dayton to make a strong statement in the postseason, most likely, unless you know, something drastically changes between now and the end of the year.
Right.
But there's a winner from last week.
New Mexico, the Lobos, they are playing some very good basketball right now. 16-3 overall on the season. They have wins over two of the top teams in their conference against San Diego State, Utah State, and then they picked up a road win at the Air Force Academy, which is more a trap game than anything else, I would say, because Air Force can play some decent basketball, but at the same time, they're not going to out-talent anyone in the Mountain West, especially not this season. And the league's deep. They're sitting at third right now, just a game out of first place behind Utah State, and should be a real good close to the season. As looking through the rest of New Mexico's schedule, they do close at Utah State. They have a stretch where they play Nevada, San Diego State, and Colorado State all in consecutive games. That will be a very good conference to watch throughout the month of February, as there are five or six teams right now that have legitimate NCAA tournament hopes.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's beating up on each other at the top, and it's really been kind of, we expected the top six teams to really go back and forth. Nevada has faltered a little bit to start conference play. Boise State is having a really strong start to conference play, sort of playing their way back into that at-large conversation. But yeah, Richard Pitino has been doing some great things in New Mexico the last couple of years, and this year is no exception. You know, Air Force is one of those teams you have to emphatically take care of business against. They went on the road, did just that, right after they swept San Diego State and Utah State, two of those top six teams, by double digits. So, you know, this is a team that has had some fast starts in years past, but felt a little hollower in terms of kind of wins and how good is this team really. But I mean, the perimeter trio of Mashburn, House, and Dent has been very, very dangerous for anyone to deal with, but certainly Mountain West teams are finding out about that quickly. My one concern with the Mountain West, as I said, they are beating up on each other a lot. They're these teams, pretty much all of these teams have at least two losses, with the exception of Utah State and Boise State. I think those numbers are going to keep rising, and I think we might get back in a situation where these are all mid-seed teams that are going to have more difficult first-round matchups than you might have expected. But it's really just all about avoiding the bad losses. Like,
right,
as long as you're not losing to Air Force, San Jose State, Fresno State, like a UNLV loss doesn't feel great, but it's not as bad as UNLV at the start of the season, now that they have everybody eligible.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of movement between now and the end of the year, but New Mexico, playing as they are, I think has a great shot for a good seed in the NCAA tournament. It's a great week ahead. You have another road game, but it's at one of those teams, San Jose State, you should handle, and then Nevada team that's really been struggling comes to town. So another opportunity for a 2-0 week. They can take advantage. They're going to keep moving up in the polls.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those scenarios, I think, where we have some gaudy records for a couple of these teams, and you see them on the, you know, 7-8-9 line and wonder how the hell is a team with 26 wins sitting at, you know, 26-7 or whatever they'd end up being, sitting in the 8-9 game against, you know, Northwestern or whoever the hell ends up from a power conference league in that game. But it, like you said, take care of business against the teams they should beat, which there are a couple that really stand out in this group in the Mountain West, and then pick off as many as you can. A road win in the Mountain West against one of those top teams is absolute gold. It is obviously not easy to do. There are some very good home court environments throughout this league, but New Mexico, Boise State, and Utah State have all put themselves in very good position early.
Absolutely. I'm going to shout out Tennessee. The Vols are cooking. Dalton Knecht, another great week for him. 39 against Florida. I think at one point he scored 20 in a row for the Vols. And then a quieter game, 25 against Alabama. But Tennessee, just kind of reminding people, they are still a very good defensive team. You know, Dalton Kincaid changes the ceiling offensively, but Alabama is a great offensive team. Normally, Tennessee took them out of their rhythm, forced them into their worst game of the season. 22 turnovers, 4 of 21 from 3. As we know, that's where Nate Oates likes to live. Tennessee made that impossible in a comfortable victory over a team who had been undefeated in SEC play. So, again, I haven't wandered far, but I am back all in on the Vols.
Yeah, their defensive performance has been great since those three straight losses came against Purdue, Kansas, and North Carolina. Again, all three very good teams, three of the best offensive teams in the country when they are on. They gave up a ton of points to North Carolina, but since then, looking through the schedule, it looks like the most they've given up was 79 in a win against Illinois, and then that 77-72 loss to Mississippi State. Oh, wait, they did give up 79 as well to Georgia. But when Kinect's on, which he has been lately, it like you said, it changes the ceiling for this team, because we've seen them get in those scoring droughts where all of a sudden you wonder, how is this team so highly ranked, so highly regarded? They simply cannot put it together and play offense. And then you see them on the defensive end, and you're like, okay, this makes a little more sense. But Kinect adds that whole nother dimension to this team that if they need someone to go get a bucket, they've got that guy.
Yeah. And if Jordan Ganey ever comes back to what we know he can do offensively, that would be a great boost too. You know, showed that flash in the exhibition game, kind of like Key did against Gonzaga, and then disappeared for a lot of that season. Kind of seen that from Ganey so far, but Kinect has been so good that it hasn't really mattered much. Obviously the big question is, can it translate to March? Can they actually go on a run that goes to the second weekend and beyond and looks aesthetically pleasing? Because I think a lot of people already are discounting last year's Sweet 16 just from the rock fight that was the second round win over Duke. I think to this point, Tennessee has largely proven that they are a different team, but I know those demons are difficult to exercise. So we'll see. But right now, playing great basketball, and we're loving what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's a prove it kind of thing. It's like Creighton last year. They've made it to the Sweet 16 second round so many times, but until they can get over that hump, you know, there's only so much you can say about how good a team they are.
Yeah, exactly. I had one more SEC team. Back to the well with Auburn. They're still just doing that thing. Really, any team that just puts Ole Miss in a body bag, they're going to get a shout out because they did that and then some. Yeah. 17 turnovers, 36% from the field for the Rebs. Auburn's defense, we've talked about how they've been consistently living in one of those handful of 3-4 teams in the top 15 of both offensive and defensive efficiency on KenPom. And games like this really drive that point home of, when they're on, they can get on you in a hurry, and it's easy to let games get out of hand or just see them go on a massive, massive run. Not very welcoming for Flanagan returning to the Plains, I'll say that much. But yeah, like, they're not the one criticism you could offer is they're not going to overwhelm you with a Dalton Kincaid like score. Like, they're very spread out. It depends on how you look at it. There's not really a go-to guy, but they don't really need one to this point. Their backcourt is so deep, and Broome and usually Jalen Williams give you enough on the front court to make sure that if someone's having a bad game, there's usually guys waiting in the wings to pick it up. That's my only nit to pick with them, but they're playing great basketball right now. And I mean, we said this was going to be a crazy race. Right now, they're the only undefeated team in the SEC. So for now, they have the inside track.
Yeah. Just to prove your point even further, they had 40 bench points in this game. 40 of their 82 points were from the bench.
It's pretty good.
So if you're doing math at home, that's 42 points from the starters. Just really good, really deep. That is always a positive. I think the concern does become, who do you go to in late game stretches? And I think that that's what the rest of this month and February to figure out. That's what Bruce Pearl needs to understand about his team is when it comes to March, when you're in the SEC tournament, when you're in the NCAA tournament, if you need a bucket or someone to run a play for somebody out there, who's that guy that's going to go out, can create his own shot, but you have the confidence in, and he has the consistency to knock it down. I would imagine at this point it's probably Broome, but I don't know if that's limiting yourself too much offensively.
And that's tough to do, especially in the tournament too. You usually like that to be a perimeter player.
Right.
I think like Aiden Holloway showed he can do that against Baylor in the opening game, and then he's almost been a bit deferential at times since. You don't really want to be in a situation, I think, where you're asking KD Johnson to be
right
a high volume guy, because he can have those games where he's pretty inefficient. I think Aiden Holloway is your most dynamic perimeter piece. But yeah, they have the benefit of not playing a ton of close games, but when they were in one against Baylor, it did seem like they were going back to him time and time again. And I would imagine Bruce Pearl would be probably most comfortable with that. But yeah, I mean, that's something they can definitely work out over the course of the season, because I would expect they're going to see more close games in SEC play, just with how good and how deep the conference is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's just something to keep an eye on for sure as they get into less of these blowout, run them out of their gym type situations.
What else did you have as a winner?
Yeah, I'm going to go down the mid-major path for a quick minute here. Samford, the Bulldogs, won a huge battle in the SoCon. They are sitting atop the league at 6-0. They're 17-2 overall. They beat West Carolina on the road, Western Carolina, excuse me, who was previously unbeaten as well in league play, to give themselves the outright lead. This is a Samford team that lost at Purdue by a million to open the season. They lost at VCU by 10, and they have not lost since. They have won 17 straight games. They have just a really nice balance with four different scorers. Okorakor is their best player. He averages 21 minutes a game, but still scores 17 points. Staten McRae, Jermaine Marshall, Jaden Campbell, all guys that can put things together on the offense. Samford's got that depth in the starting lineup. They move the ball incredibly well offensively. They're top, I believe, 10 in assist ratio and assist rate. They score the ball well. They run a really nice up-tempo offense that is fun to watch. They're fourth in adjusted tempo in KenPom, and they're still top 60 offensively. So this is a ton of fun to watch this team, and they continue to impress out of the SoCon, which is a league that often produces or has shown the ability to produce a team capable of a Sweet 16 plus run in the NCAA tournament. Just see Furman the past couple of years.
Yeah, and I mean, Bucky McMillan is a hell of a coach who's probably going to start getting looks from bigger schools, as well as one of the youngest looking 40-year-olds I've ever seen. But yeah, that's lower conference basketball in the South is definitely having a bit of a renaissance. And, you know, we've seen some of the big non-conference wins that the Western Carolina, just a few spots down in the standings, has gotten. But Samford really hasn't been able to take down the SoCon. It's been a very competitive conference for a couple of years that, you know, has been dominated by the likes of Chattanooga, Wofford, Furman. But
yeah,
17 wins in a row. There is definitely something to that. And yeah, this is a team that, whether high major coaches will admit it or not, there are teams that you start to look at as like, you know, if we get a four seed, here's who I think we probably struggle to match up against. And I think Samford's definitely starting to make that short list for some schools.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Another team that I think a lot of folks would not like to see come March is in the conference, the Colonial, excuse me, Drexel, 7-0 in the league. They have a win already over Villanova. They have won seven straight right now, and they look very, very comfortable overall. They have their own Justin Moore, who is scoring 13 points a game to lead the team. And overall, they are just a really consistent basketball team that has found their footing outside of the non-conference and in league play.
Yeah, it's a good name. It's a good name for a reason. And
yeah,
that we saw what they could do when they did not finish sixth out of the Big Five earlier this season. So that's very important. They do have that that win in the because that was technically a battle of the Justin Moores. Assuming did Villanova's play in that game? I think he did.
I think he did, but I don't know for sure. A minute.
But I'm going to choose to believe that he did. So that is more of a bigger, I guess, data point than a lot of these teams have from the non-conference, getting a win like that. Villanova team that is continuing to improve as the season goes along. And yeah, I mean, they're comfortably ahead of last year's darling Charleston, who didn't lose all that much from last year. Yeah, Drexel is definitely looking dangerous right now.
Yeah, and final thing to shout out is the America East Conference. Not many people pay attention to it, but they should. The top of the league is awesome right now. You have Bryant at 4-0, Vermont, who has been the mainstay for I don't know, over a decade at this point, it seems. Are also 4-0, and then UMass Lowell sits at 5-0 with a half-game lead. The top of the league has won 7-5 and 4 straight games. At some point, something's got to give. The thing to watch, UMass Lowell is 8-3 on the road. Vermont is 4-3 on the road. Bryant is 6-6 on the road. These teams have played plenty of road games because they are in the mid-major tier, and they found ways to win a lot of these games. So Bryant has a ton of talent. Vermont has easily the best coach in the league, and UMass Lowell is playing some of the best basketball right now. They score the ball a ton. They rebound it really well. They're playing solid defense. So the America East is a league to watch out for.
That is the most in the country, right? I think UMass Lowell true road wins.
Yes.
Yeah. And then FAU is definitely closely watching Bryant and hoping that they can win this league, or at least string as many wins together in a row as possible to try to make that loss look a little better. Cause people forget Brian was good enough to do that. Knock out FAU. This has been Vermont's league. The one time really it was not, they were upset in the championship game by a school named UMBC, who went out and beat a bigger school named Virginia in a historic 16-1 upset. Vermont's had some March magic, but I think they've been a little lacking in recent years. They've been dominating the league. They've been winning the league, but haven't really been able to take that into March and make something happen, even though they are a popular upset pick every year because they're always a good team under Becker. He's got a really good program up there, but yeah, UMass Lowell has been coming on strong over the last couple of years. Bryant as well, joining the conference, even without Grasso, they've been picking it up too. So yeah, this is a race that I don't think anyone would have looked at preseason, been like, oh, it's not that intriguing. Like, I know earlier in the season, we're just noticing it's like, hey, Maine is winning some games. That's interesting.
Yeah. New Hampshire's played well too.
Yeah. Yeah, New Hampshire, I know, picked off Rhode Island, got a couple good wins earlier in the season outside of that. But yeah, there's some good basketball all over. There's some good conferences out west we haven't talked about either. But yeah, like even though you might go down from high major, mid major, technically low major, any part of the country, there's good hoops happening.
Yeah, and to confirm, UMass Lowell is tied with Western Carolina at 8-3 for most road wins in the country.
Western Carolina, who is the school that made Michael Shrewsbury lose his mind on his team because they just came in and beat up Notre Dame.
Yeah. That was it for winners.
Okay. Losers, Memphis. The magic has run out a little bit. They've been playing with fire for most of the American Athletic season, letting letting big wins disappear. They had a few close wins to start conference play over Tulsa, SMU, UTSA. Got a blowout over Wichita State, but none of those schools really strike fear into the hearts of many. And certainly if you are a top 10 team, which Memphis was, which they should not have been, but it's just kind of one of those things where voters are like, did you lose last week? No. Okay. We'll move you up. And kind of looking at quantity over quality, but back-to-back losses to South Florida, where they blew a 20-point lead, and then Tulane, the Fighting Ron Hunters, most recently. South Florida is not a bad team. Neither is Tulane, really. But yeah, it's just kind of from the perspective of, like, this is, it's a low bar, but this is probably the best that South Florida has been in several years. Tulane has improved under Hunter as well. But again, it's, you know, these are not NCAA tournament teams. And Memphis, again, top 15, top 10 team. Was that deserved? Maybe not. But they've been playing great basketball at times. They have good, the transfers have just been doing everything. David Jones and Quinterly had some great games from Dandridge, but consistently blowing leads to inferior opponents, letting them get back into the game. And then luckily, if you want to call it that, squeaking out wins kind of caught up to them this week. And yeah, like I don't really see Memphis as a huge threat to make a deep run in March. Because right now it's, they have the talent to beat any team in their conference, certainly. FAU is going to be a battle, but anyone else, they should be pretty heavy favorites. But spending a lot of time sort of almost playing with their food and then being surprised near the end of games where teams are finally showing life, and then, you know, they couldn't just kind of coast anymore.
Yeah, I mean, this goes to your point before about Samford. It's like Memphis is probably a team that would not like to see the Samford club, because they can push the tempo, play exactly the way Memphis wants to play. But also, they're a team that if Memphis starts to blow a lead, they can score and pile on the points very quickly. And like that is the recipe for disaster in the NCAA tournament, is getting a lead, getting comfortable, and then all of a sudden the neutral crowd starts to get into it and favor the underdog, because everyone likes to see an upset in March. And next thing you know, you go from up 15, up 20 to a tight game late, and you have no offensive rhythm whatsoever. It feels like this Memphis team gets so out of sync so fast. And I don't know if that's a byproduct of just the roster turnover, how much the roster turns over every single year, or if it's the offensive style they play, or what it is. But for as good as David Jones has been, for as good as Javon Quinterly has been, it's not enough to get them over the hump in some of these games where they just fall apart.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that when they're in the top 10, the metrics have them outside the top 50. It's like they might be winning games, but they haven't looked great doing it. And then, you know, water's sort of finding its level this week.
Yeah.
Who do you have as a loser?
Rodney Terry. He is the loser. You can't, there's so many pieces to this, but you can't go on the horns down rant against UCF and then celebrate, telling them, you know, we don't celebrate like crazy. You don't win a championship in January or whatever he said, and then go nuts because you beat Baylor, and then go into the post game and give like not even a half-assed apology statement out there. Like, It's just all a bad visual for a guy that had built up so much goodwill over the last year and a half after taking over for Chris Beard. It's to the point where you just want teams to continue to do the horns down, because he was such a sore loser about it. Then he picks up a big win and he does the exact same thing that other teams do. It's college basketball. It's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to celebrate the big wins. You're supposed to enjoy this. Like, maybe as a coach, you should focus on the, like, hey, let's not get too high, let's not get too low when things happen. I think that's the even keel that a lot of coaches like to preach. But at the same time, you're human. Like, let the emotion happen. Understand that these are 18 to 22-year-old, and I guess in some cases 23, 24, 25-year-old kids now, but emotions are going to be at play. And if they win a big game, UCF is first year in the Big 12. They are playing bigger schools than they have ever played in conference play. If they want to celebrate a win like that, they deserve every bit of it. It was very, very Coach K of him to be chastising people in the handshake line without having deserved, or not deserved, having earned the ability to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I had Baylor as a loser this week too because they lost to this Texas team and Kansas State. That's all I'm going to say on that. But I had, Roddy Terry in Texas. Like, it's just exhausting. Sorry it sucks for you, Texas, but it is far more exhausting for me to hear about it and for everyone to try to bend over backwards for you. Like, I'm still annoyed that turned into a personal foul penalty in football. It's the dumbest thing ever. Like, the softest thing ever. And now it's come over to basketball, too. And yeah, it's like, football's good. Nobody's looking at Texas being like, oh, you know, we are maybe better at basketball as they kind of were last year. And to your point, he has just speed run through all of the goodwill. It's like, we got rid of our coach, who is not a good person. We have Rodney Terry, continued that well, made a good run last year after Chris Beard departed from the program. But yeah, like, this is just Streisand effect. It's like, you don't want this to happen, so you're calling more attention to it, which in turn is only going to make it happen more. And you just sound like...
And put a bigger microscope on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so you could just not say anything. Whatever. And yeah, so you just like not say anything, and then, yeah, you went on a buzzer beater, celebrate, that's fine. But now you've put yourself above everyone else, held yourself to a high standard, and the kids do that as well. Yeah, it all does not really jive well together.
Yeah, yeah. And in the same vein, Duke, just the biggest crybaby stuff after losing to Pitt at home, pissed off about celebrating in front of the Cameron crazies. Like, that is what this sport is about. If you don't want that to happen, don't lose. Like, you are better than this Pitt team, Duke. You are supposed to be a national championship contending team. You have brought back some of the best players in the country. Don't lose to Pitt.
I'm actually going to find a way to blame Coach K for this.
Let's see.
A few years ago, he got after the Cameron crazies for just booing Jeff Capel relentlessly. You know, like, we don't boo our own or whatever he was saying, which I don't even remember if they were booing him specifically. I think he was just pissed off and needed somebody to lash out to. So, who better than your own student section who's there to support you? So now Duke, every time that Pitt comes, they are on pins and needles. Everyone, including the players, is doing everything they can to make sure Capel feels welcome. And this time it turned out to be, let's just lose the basketball game. So yeah, like, people are going to be excited about that. I have no problem with celebration within reason. Like, if you're actually going out there and like swinging on people, don't do that.
Yeah.
But if you're just like keeping it to yourself and celebrating, like, same thing with the court storming discourse, like, that's all well and good until something bad happens. And I know people want to make it seem like bad things have happened. Haven't really. Like, tried to see it in the women's game yesterday with Caitlin Clark, which she, I mean, bless her heart. She doesn't realize when the game's over, and you know, you don't have to try to sell calls anymore. But she goes up and finds the Ohio State student, pushes them, then flops away and acts like she's hurt. Like, that is a chef's kiss of a performance. But people will point to that and be like, we can't have people storm the court anymore. I think it's okay for players to celebrate. I think it's okay for them to do horns down, as long as there's no actual physical violence.
Yeah,
people can celebrate how they see fit. But that was an exhausting discourse, like, all week this week, from various games. And I didn't much care for it.
So great. So much fun that we have to deal with in this sport, but that's the joy of it. Like, the games, the chaos, the madness of it brings about these conversations, for better or worse. This week it was obviously for worse, but in the past it has been for better.
But the additional spin zone there too is, this just proves that people care. People are caring loudly this week. That's something we can take solace in. I only had one more loser. Haven't talked about him much this year because I don't want to, but it is, I'm having zero fun watching this Indiana team. And in a vacuum, losing to Purdue and Wisconsin was fine, but it's bad. I want a Max Klusman on my team. I'd like a Connor Asisian on my team. The perimeter issues are existing. Kind of like, you know, no transfer guards wanted to come through because you're returning two starters and Xavier Johnson and Trey Galloway. Xavier Johnson is not the same player as he was pre-injury. And I think it would have behooved Mike Woodson to not bet that he would be. Tamar Bates has turned into a 50-40-90 shooter at Missouri, which is just awesome to see that every time. And if Khalil Ware misses any time, it's going to be just a speed run to the bottom of the standings because Peyton Sparks, nice guy, reminds me of Hanner Mascara-Perea every time he tries to dribble a basketball. And just the entire Wisconsin game, that was a very winnable game somehow. If Khalil Ware was playing, but he was not. So Max Klusman just kept getting to the bucket unimpeded. And yeah, it's not good right now, but baseball season is soon. I keep looking at football transfer class ratings and feeling better that way. So, you know, we're at that stage in the cycle.
Incredible shout out for an East Tennessee State legend that you just had there. I believe Steve Forbes was down there at that point as well. So,
I think Peter Jerkin was literally the only time I've actually gotten triggered watching Indiana was the Eastern Washington loss, whatever year that was, where it's just like, if you attempt to either pass it to him or he dribbles, he is not going to catch it and you will lose control of the ball. It's like, I can do this. What are we doing? So yeah, just bringing up fun memories.
Yeah, it's been tough, and I will take some of the blame for Indiana's run here as I put Rutgers in the loser category. They immediately went out and beat Indiana, holding them to 57 points. I'm sorry to rehash that, but I have to put my hand up and say that is my fault. I take the blame. They bounced back nicely against Minnesota, but I expected a little better against Wisconsin. I think Purdue is just a bad matchup, especially if their guards can play decent basketball. I think it's just a tough matchup for Indiana. I will say this. I think Illinois is a very winnable game, especially on the road. I would say that I think Iowa and Penn State should be wins as well. If you can pick off two of those three, you're going to be in an okay position. That said, if anything worse than that happens, I think, like you said, it could be a speed run to the bottom of the standings.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really – like, those are the two games I would expect Indiana to lose. Like, Purdue's the best team in the conference. Wisconsin, I don't think Indiana's won there since 98. Just a house of horrors. Something will always go wrong. But it's kind of more the way it happened. And yeah, I don't know. Like, Illinois, that's a whole nother discussion. Like, why are we giving standing ovations for Terrence Shannon Jr.? I think in Villanark, like, they're obviously going to win that game. And I don't know. The only thing Archie Miller knew how to do was beat Iowa teams he had no business beating. Mike Woodson has not done that yet, so we'll see what happens. But, yeah. Devin Taylor, one of the best MLB draft prospects in the country, plays for the Indiana Hoosiers. So just watching highlights of dingers, getting ready for next month when the season starts.
Well, once again, be brothers in arms having our alma maters lose to Iowa and Rutgers in the same season. So wouldn't that be lovely?
Got that going for us.
I wanted to quickly shout out Wisconsin. You can't start the season undefeated in the Big Ten and then go out and lose at the Bryce Jordan Center. You simply cannot do it.
Tough place to play.
It is a very tough place to play. We have talked about this many times. I'm waiting for them to roll the red carpet out for us to come to a game and honestly sit wherever we want for every single timeout because there are just so many open seats in that building. But yeah, like you gave yourself a great lead in the Big Ten, something that could have potentially been insurmountable. if you just held serve and now it was half a game back, and you've still got a number of tough road games coming up, Nebraska, Iowa, Indiana, and Purdue to close the season. So Purdue twice. So you've lost basically the control your own destiny part of this, because I can't see this Wisconsin team sweeping Purdue.
There's some competition, but I would pretty confidently say Penn State is the worst team in the conference. Unless Michigan like completely goes into free fall mode. So that's really the one game you could not lose.
Really
still doesn't make any sense. Like, I didn't even realize Penn State got up to three wins. I know they had the win. Oh, Michigan. Okay, that barely counts.
Yeah.
But I know they had the one against Ohio State where Ohio State blew a massive lead in the start to their January swoon. But yeah, that's Penn State might be something eventually under Mike Rhodes. Micah Shrewsbury knew exactly when to get out, and that is about all I have to say about them.
Yeah. Last shout out, Kansas. You cannot lose to West Virginia. You cannot be a national championship contender, a Big 12 title contender, and lose to this year's version of West Virginia. Simply should not be allowed, and they should be a better team, even if it is on the road. They've now lost two games in Big 12 play, both of them on the road to significantly inferior opponents in UCF and West Virginia. I feel like this is the time where everyone says it might not be Kansas's year to win the Big 12, and then they're going to rattle something like eight straight wins off and then sit atop the league by two games. Because if you look at the top, it's Texas Tech and it's Kansas State at 4-1. And that is obviously a massive benefit to the Jayhawks because they're just a game behind, but Houston is also right there with them and Oklahoma.
It is exactly that point in the season.
They're
like, I don't, Texas Tech nor Kansas State is winning the conference this year. I feel pretty confident saying that. So, that's not something to be too concerned about yet. But you know, Raekwon Battle pretty much played McCullough to a draw, and then your other guards were mostly outplayed by a familiar name, Kirk Reza. And that's never want to live. So
no,
they like Kansas has been highly ranked. There have been many times this year they haven't really looked the part, which happens, but I think more so this year you can really call into question the depth, because you know Nick Timberlake hasn't had many big games. He's actually pretty solid off the bench in this one, but I think they were expecting him to be a bigger piece. Like outside of four of your five starters, Dickinson, Adams, Harris, and McCullough, there hasn't been a lot of other production. Those guys have had a ton of great games. Dickinson is pretty consistently productive. McCullough has been getting double doubles, if not triple doubles, but at a certain point you need some other guys to step up, and it's not for lack of talent on the roster. It's just guys got to get it going.
Yeah, I truthfully, I expected more offensively out of DeJuan Harris. Like, it's Bill Self has loved him for so long, and it seems like he does shoot the ball well, but it's just he refuses to shoot the ball. When he needs to, he can put the ball in the basket, but it's at the point where it almost feels like he should try and step up, take over a little more offensively, maybe stop deferring as much to the other guys on the floor.
Yeah. Also, just to say, UCF, not as terrible as first thought. They are a pretty darn good defensive team, but still, that those headlines of, you know, national title contenders, Big 12 contenders losing to UCF in year one, a little surprising.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all the losers.
All right. I'm ending on Indiana. Can't go any lower. So we'll stop it there. We will see you next time for some more college basketball talk.